This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Syria calls on the UN Security Council to issue a clear and explicit condemnation of Israeli aggressions on its territory. Pakistan declares a state of emergency after nearly 1,000 people die and more than 30 million people are affected by devastating flooding across the country. And at least 23 people are killed in fighting between rival armed groups in the Libyan capital, raising fears of an all-out conflict in the North African country. Hello and welcome. Your world news come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. Top story this hour, Syria has called on the United Nations and the Security Council to issue a clear and explicit condemnation of Israeli aggressions on its territory. In a letter addressing the UN chief and the head of the Security Council, the Syrian Foreign Ministry recalled some of recent Israeli crimes, including an attack on the Damascus International Airport last June. It said the attack caused the airport to go completely out of service for 2 weeks. The ministry noted the regime is determined today more than ever to sabotage Syria's infrastructure and endanger the lives of civilians. It said Israeli aggressions are a direct threat to regional and international peace and security, adding Damascus reserves the right to respond to the attacks. Israel frequently carries out missile strikes on Syria. The latest one came last Thursday when Israeli jets targeted a research facility in the city of Masyaf. Palestinians in the blockaded Gaza Strip attended the Friday sermon and prayer in front of the Red Cross office to show their solidarity with Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. This as last Monday, Palestinian prisoners started protesting the inhumane detention conditions. Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon brings us more from the besieged Gaza Strip.
Hundreds of people attended the Friday prayer in front of the Red Cross office in the Gaza Strip, in a move to express their sympathy and unity with Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails and detention centers. They came to drum up support for Palestinian prisoners who kicked off a series of protests last Monday against persistent mistreatment inside regime jails. The event is part of the Friday of Rage in solidarity with Palestinian detainees. During the Friday sermon, Hamas movement warned the Israeli regime against harming Palestinian prisoners.
Our military wings, including the Qassam and Quds brigades, and the military wings of all Palestinian resistance factions, are all united behind the prisoners. We will spare no effort to secure the release of the prisoners. Harming Palestinian prisoners is an attack on all Palestinian resistance factions.
Over the past 4 days, Palestinian detainees held in 24 Israeli prisons have refused to take part in security checks and returned their meals. They also organized sit-ins in prison yards as part of their protest action.
The Israeli prison service reneged on understandings that were previously reached with prisoners' representatives. It imposed punitive measures, including moving tens of detainees to solitary confinement, preventing inmates from going to the prison yard, and banning prisoners from meeting their families. In response to this, the Palestinian prisoners have declared the state of general mobilization last Monday.
In recent weeks, the Israeli prison service increased its oppressive measures against Palestinian prisoners by imposing double isolation on some detainees. Observers say the Palestinian prisoners have become propaganda material for candidates in Israel's elections.
Palestinian prisoners are escalating their actions because they demand better detention conditions. The suffering of Palestinian prisoners increases every time the Israeli regime plans to hold elections. Israeli officials are using the oppression of prisoners as part of their election campaigns.
Currently, there are some 5,000 Palestinian detainees in Israeli prisons, and that figure includes women and children. According to prisoners' advocacy groups, the Israeli regime has detained more than 1 million Palestinians since the Nakba in 1948, under the watchful eye of the international community. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Pakistan has been grappling with monsoon flooding that has swept much of the country. Officials say the death toll has almost reached the 1,000 mark since mid-June. The government has declared an emergency and mobilized the military. Thousands of residents in critical areas have been ordered to evacuate their homes. Pakistan has called for international assistance to cope with the aftermath of the natural disaster. Authorities say this year's monsoon flooding has affected over 33 million people, and nearly 1 million homes have been destroyed or badly damaged. This year's floods are comparable to those of 2010, the worst on record.
That year, over 2,000 people died, and nearly a fifth of the country was underwater.
Monsoon rains are still pounding Pakistan, hampering all sorts of communications in key cities and towns in four provinces of the country. Roads, houses, hotels, and buildings, along with other infrastructures, have been washed away by the flood waters. Southwestern Balochistan and northwestern Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces are now in the spotlight due to the sheer magnitude of devastation witnessed there in recent days. That's while millions of Pakistanis ravaged by extreme flooding are still awaiting relief in remote rural areas.
As far as government support is concerned, I think they supported only 50%. A lot of complaints from the local communities that there is no support received so far from the government. They are demanding shelters, food items, and a lot of other things.
Across large swaths of Pakistan, houses, schools, roads, and bridges have been destroyed. Floods also left thousands displaced and struggling to find safety along with their livestock.
Floods have taken everything from us, what we left behind with our kids, family, and cattle. We are living under open sky. We are looking for help from the government.
Meanwhile, Shehbaz Sharif has visited the heavily affected areas. He has already appealed to the international community to send aid and relief to help them deal with the devastation.
We are doing our best to help flood-affected people. The 30 years record of monsoon has been broken this year. The situation is demanding that we all should rise above the politics and to help the flood victims to overcome their miseries.
Pakistan is 8 on the Global Climate Risk Index for being one of the most vulnerable countries in the face of extreme weather caused by climate change. The country witnessed more rain than ever recorded this monsoon season.
As floods have caused havoc from north to the south, the government has declared national emergency. With 33 million affected by the floods, authorities struggle to rescue people and provide relief. Nasir Kazmi, Nosheera, Northwest Pakistan.
Staying with the deadly flash floods in Pakistan, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has offered condolences and expressed sympathy with the country's government and people. In a phone call with Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, Raisi said Iran is ready to provide its neighbor with any kind of assistance. The Iranian president said he has tasked relevant bodies with supplying first aid to the flood-stricken people of Pakistan as soon as possible. He added that Iran remains a friend of Pakistan in times of hardship and seeks to continue bilateral cordial relations. Sharif, for his part, thanked the Islamic Republic for supporting his country in times of difficulty. Iran has unveiled its latest precision strike unmanned aerial vehicle manufactured by the country's armed forces. The drone named Abu Abil has been outfitted with an optical seeker and a warhead capable of detecting targets. It's also able to capture and relay live images of the targets and destroy them with precision. Iran has made great achievements in the field of UAVs over the past years. In August, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps said the country has become an exporter of military drones. Last year, General Kenneth McKenzie, head of the United States Central Command, also said Iran's widespread use of drones meant that the U.S. is operating without complete air superiority for the first time since the Korean War. A father who lost his two sons last year during the United States' withdrawal from Afghanistan speaks out on the anniversary of the event. He blamed the U.S. for their death and demanded an apology and compensation. Our correspondent, Abdullah Amirzadeh, has forwarded this report from Kabul.
It has been a year since the U.S. missile withdrawal from Afghanistan and the Taliban takeover of the country. During the pullout, thousands of Afghans flocked to airports in hope of leaving the country along with the U.S. forces. Zaki was one of them. As the Taliban encircled Kabul on August 15, hundreds of Afghans swarmed the runway of Hamid Karzai International Airport, attempting to climb onto a U.S. Air Force transport plane. Zaki made his way to the front and clambered onto the plane's landing gear. As it accelerated past 120 miles per hour, he held tight. His body was found after he plunged from the U.S. military plane as it took off, one of the most tragic and indelible images in the final chapter of the U.S. campaign in Afghanistan. We spoke to Zaki's father 1 year after his son's death. It wasn't easy to convince him at first, but this is our mission, to be the voice of the voiceless.
I just want to see the pilot of the U.S. plane to understand how he could do this. The U.S. claims that it supports human rights, but this is a sheer lie. They kill innocent people. They have not even apologized to me for my son's death. I've waited for a year for a simple apology, but it never happened.
Zaki's brother, Zabih, also lost his life during the Taliban takeover. Many Afghans blame the U.S. for the loss of innocent Afghan lives during the Washington's withdrawal.
There is no doubt that Americans are responsible for such incidents. They caused a chaos and it got out of their control. They knew such events might occur. Falling from planes or getting killed in explosions were the result of Americans' irresponsibility and mismanagement.
The cemetery where Zaki is buried is so close to his house that his father always looks at it through the window of his house every day. We asked him to take us to the cemetery where Zaki's grave is located.
The United Nations is also on their side, and so are the so-called human rights groups. The UN and the human rights are just a lie, as they are simply deceiving people. They are more like a mafia, but an official type. They must somehow pay compensation.
1 year has passed since the U.S. pulled its forces out of Afghanistan, ending almost two-decade occupation of the country. Yet no one has stood trial for the tragedy that happened during their withdrawal. There has been neither any compensation nor an apology that could at least calm those who lost their loved ones.
More than 20 people are killed in the Libyan capital as clashes erupt between rival armed groups, raising fears of an all-out conflict in a country grappling with a political crisis. Health officials say dozens of people were also wounded as gunfire and explosions rocked several districts of Tripoli. There are reports of indiscriminate shelling in civilian populated neighborhoods. A mosque and a health clinic were reportedly set on fire. The UN's Libya mission has called for an immediate cessation of hostilities. The two rival administrations, based in Tripoli and Tobruk, are exchanging blame for the violence. The Government of National Unity, led by Abdelhamid Dbeiba, says the fighting broke out after negotiations to avoid bloodshed in the city collapsed. Dbeiba's government was installed in Tripoli last year as part of a UN-led peace process to lead a transition to elections. His administration is challenged by the Tobruk-based administration of former Interior Minister Fathi Bashagha. Bashagha is backed by Libya's parliament and eastern-based military strongman Khalifa Haftar. It was a bombshell still very hard to comprehend. Britain announced a whopping 80% increase in electricity and gas bills. Now the immediate question is, how are people going to afford it? Brits are already suffering a cost of living crisis, which only appears to worsen with no relief in the near future.
It has been a rocky economic road that the Brits are traveling on, which continues to chip away at their income. Some were questioning how they would manage their expenses in the UK these days. Why, with an unprecedented inflation and a cost of living crisis? Now their nightmare has gotten worse. An 80% increase in electric and gas bills have been announced, one that is coming before the winter season.
It is a major problem because what is happening, of course, is first of all, real incomes are falling because people are not getting wage settlements in line with inflation, but below inflation. Then tax burden has increased, you know, to record levels as well. The government has been raising taxes to pay for the furlough scheme and all the money that they splurged.
To be exact, an 80% increase would mean that it would average about £3,600, or about $4,200 per year from October. And this is terrible news, especially for the poor and the ones at the bottom half of the social strata. The UK was suffering already from high energy prices, in particular heating bills, even before the Ukraine crisis began. So bad was the situation that fuel poverty, as it was called, was leading to deaths for people who could not afford to heat their homes. these are the stats that are truly shocking, that one would not expect from a European country. For example, this article in 2020 pointed out to how thousands of people in the UK died from the cold, and that fuel poverty was to blame. On average, there were 32,000 more deaths between December and March than the rest of the year. Many perished because of the refusal of a society with abundant wealth and resources to provide for its most vulnerable citizens. An average of 9,700 deaths each year were believed to be caused by living in a cold house.
We know we need to do more because actually the most vulnerable households have no cushion, have nothing available to them. So what I'm looking at is how I can target that help for those people, not just to January.
This price increase in energy bills will likely push millions into not just fuel poverty, but poverty. The UK government is now facing the unprecedented task of figuring out how to help people with their heating bills. That's in addition to a rise in the number of people applying for government assistance programs. In the meantime, many are joining a campaign calling for a stop to paying energy bills.
The unprecedented hike for energy prices in the UK will surely affect the UK's economy. One obvious outcome of this price increase is that it will chip away at people's spending power and income. This is while people's income has not kept pace with the inflation rate. Increases have been minimal or not at all. This may explain why there have been so many strikes and protests recently in different sectors in the UK. The latest, the postal workers' strike. 115,000 workers across 1,500 locations. Criminal barristers and mass rail strikes have also plagued the UK, as the country is battling a historic cost of living crisis. The outgoing Prime Minister Boris Johnson has sure left an economic mess for the next administration to deal with. But was it all his fault? The UK did not have a sound economy even before the pandemic started. Among the group of G7 economies, the UK has suffered the highest inflation rate than any other G7 country, as price rises have reached a 40-year record, with inflation recorded at 10.1% in the year for the month of July. That is the highest since the year 1982. And with the Ukraine crisis showing no signs of ending, the future looks bleak for the country, especially since the new administration will not officially begin work until October. And Boris Johnson's view on this, the new administration will clearly have to help people with energy bills.
That I know that even if things can sometimes seem dark now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In the US, the Standard & Poor's 500 fell 3.4%, its lowest daily showing since mid-June, after the US Federal Reserve Chairman spoke about the path ahead for monetary policy. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Joe Renison. The piece is titled Stocks Plunge After Fed Chair Warns of Pain from Inflation Fight. Wall Street recoiled on Friday, 26th of August, after the head of the Federal Reserve delivered a stern warning that the central bank's campaign to lower inflation by raising interest rates is unconditional, even if it leads to pain for households, businesses, and in turn for stock prices. The Standard & Poor's 500 fell 3.4%, its worst daily showing since mid-June, taking its losses for the week to 4%. The slump was broad, with every sector of the index lower. Bond investors also quickly adjusted for more rate increases from the Fed, with a 2-year Treasury yield, which is sensitive to rising interest rates, moving close to its highest level of the year at 3.44%, before easing back to 3.38%. While higher interest rates, lower growth, and softer labour market conditions will bring down inflation, they will also bring some pain to American households and businesses, Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chairman, said during a speech at the Kansas City's Fed's annual conference in Wyoming. These are the unfortunate costs of reducing inflation, but a failure to restore price stability would mean far greater pain. The central bank is grappling with the task of guiding the American economy out of a global pandemic at a time when pent-up demand, broken supply chains, and soaring energy costs have helped propel the fastest pace of price increases in a generation. The central bank is expected to raise interest rates to their highest level since 2008. When officials meet in September, increasing borrowing costs for consumers and companies and cooling the U.S. economy. Investors had expected Jerome Powell to caution that the central bank's task of fighting inflation was far from complete, after a host of other U.S. Federal Reserve officials had communicated a similar message in recent weeks. In anticipation, they pulled nearly $1 billion from funds that invest in U.S. stocks for the week through Wednesday, according to data from EPFR Global. Funds that buy low-rate bonds, known as junk bonds, saw more than $4 billion of withdrawals. Still, the clarity of Jerome Powell's comments on Friday, 26th of August, removed any uncertainty about his intentions to make economic conditions more restrictive, said Lee Ferridge, head of macro strategy for North America at State Street Global Markets. This was not the Powell we normally see, where he tries to be more balanced, Mr. Ferridge said. I don't see how you could take what he said any other way. Such caution reflects a marked change of sentiment on Wall Street, where trading in July and early August had been defined by a roaring market rebound, in part predicted under the idea that the U.S. Federal Reserve was about to start easing off its aggressive campaign of raising interest rates. After plunging over 23% for the year through to mid-June, the Standard & Poor's 500 rallied more than 17% over the next 2 months. Jerome Powell's remarks offered the strongest case yet that investors had gotten ahead of themselves. Following Friday's market moves, the index remains about 15% lower for this year. Our responsibility to deliver price stability is unconditional, Jerome Powell said. Some continue to question Mr. Powell's conviction. The central bank has stepped in to support financial markets on numerous occasions since the 2008 financial crisis. Andrew Brenner, head of the International Fixed Income at National Alliance Securities, suggested that the Federal Reserve might come to investors' rescue again if its decision to maintain an extended period of higher interest rates damages the economy. I continue to not believe him, Andrew Brenner said. Trading in some corners of the financial markets offered signs that Mr. Brenner is not alone in thinking that the Federal Reserve may end up easing its campaign. Investors continue to bet on the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates next year, contrary to the central bank's own predictions. futures prices that forecast the path of Federal Reserve interest rate increases rise through June 2023 before falling through the second half of next year. The Federal Reserve's policymakers' median prediction has rates remaining elevated until 2024. Investors took some relief from a fresh inflation report on Friday, which showed that the pace of price increases in the United States continues to moderate, with some investors viewing the numbers as limiting the need for further U.S. Federal Reserve action. A second data set showed a decline in future expectations for the rate of inflation. Attention will now turn to the U.S. government's monthly update on the labor market that is due next week, with a focus on any sign that hiring and unemployment are worsening. So far, despite some expectations that higher borrowing costs would eventually slow hiring, employers in the United States have continued to add jobs, and the unemployment rate has matched its 50-year low. I believe once Jerome Powell starts to see unemployment pick up, he will shy away, Andrew Brenner said. The backdrop sets up a month that already sits uncomfortably in investors' psyche. Seasonally, September is the worst month for the Standard & Poor's 500, according to the index analyst Howard Silverblatt. It's a challenging few weeks ahead, said Mr. Ferrage of State Street Global Markets. The U.S. Federal Reserve has talked about causing pain and how markets have to react. It's hard to make a positive case for equities after this.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is a beautiful saying from the martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. Do you not see that the truth is not followed and falsehood not discouraged?
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the charitable nature of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome everyone. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano, and in today's lesson, we're going to talk about the charitable nature of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam. The quality of charity was so in the blood of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam that everyone during his lifetime, during the time when he was the leader, he was Imam, used to love him a lot. He helped a lot. He helped the needy. He used to help everyone who needed help from him without asking. And without considering that he's from the bad side, he's his follower or he's not his follower. He was helping them. I'd like to report one of a few happenings that took place during his lifetime that shows us that Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam had a charitable nature. He liked helping people. To one of his maids, Anas has narrated that he was with the Holy Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam, you know, with a container of perfume and presented it to the Imam alayhi salam. Now, His Eminence Imam Hussein alayhi salam told her, "You are free for the sake of Allah." Anas was so astonished and he asked, "Maid, get you a container of perfume and you have emancipated her? You've left her free just because of one perfume, of a single perfume?" His Eminence Imam Hussein alayhi salam said, "The Almighty Allah has taught us in this manner. The Almighty Allah says, whenever someone wishes you, you must reply in a better way or return that same greeting. And better than that was making her free, letting her go." Now, by these lofty manners and great benevolence, he captured the hearts of Muslims and they became devoted to his love and guardianship. They loved him for the act of charity. Thank you so much for listening. We're coming back in a few minutes.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. Now, in this program, in this episode, we're talking about the charitable nature of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. He had this nature in him. He used to help everyone who came to him for the need. And he used to give more. If in cases whereby he had the chance to give more, he gave more. I would like to report about something, about a happening that took place during his lifetime. Let's report about the second happening that took place during the life of Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam that shows his charitable nature. To a borrower, one day, someone who was borrowing from him, one day after the martyrdom of his brother, Al-Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba, Imam Hussein alayhi salam was sitting in a corner in the mosque of the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Abdullah bin Zubair and Utbah bin Abi Sufyan were also sitting in a corner of the mosque, the same mosque. Now, a Bedouin arrived on a camel. He tethered his camel and entered the mosque. Then he approached Utbah bin Abi Sufyan and saluted him. He returned the greeting and the Bedouin said, you know, he was a traveler, "I have killed the son of my uncle, cousin, and blood money is being demanded from me. Would you give me something?" He was borrowing from Utbah bin Abi Sufyan. So he asked him, "Will you give me something?" Utbah raised his head and ordered his servants to pay him 100 dirhams. The Bedouin said, "I do not want anything less than the full amount of the blood money." Utbah did not pay any attention to him, and the Bedouin went away from before him, dejected, and came to Ibn Zubayr and told him his problem, and he ordered that 200 dirhams be given to him. But the Bedouin, the borrower, the guy who was traveling, the traveler refused and went towards Imam Hussein and informed the Holy Imam about his requirements. So His Eminence ordered that they pay 10,000 dirhams to the man and told him, "This amount is for you to pay off your debts," and ordered that another 10,000 dirhams be given to him. And he said, "This is for you to make arrangements for your upkeep and to improve your living conditions and spend the amount on your family." He was really overjoyed at this, and he recited the following couplet: "Never any fragrance reached me, nor was I involved in a love relationship, yet I became enchanted. He never met such love from anyone during his lifetime." This is just but an example of how charitable Al-Imam Husseini was, and we can learn a lot out of his life. Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be left tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
You might think twice about throwing out your old trainers after this story. A startup in Tunisia breathes new life into old shoes as artists restore and even customize the footwear. The new business is called Kenenti and is located in the capital, Tunis. Here, the team uses fabrics, laces and leather recovered from various factories for the repair work. The creative artists work on every detail during each project, even the soles of the shoes. The work aims to find solutions to shoe waste and reuse items instead of adding them to the world's landfills. Cherif Zeroui is the co-founder of Kenenti. He says the idea came to him 2 years ago when he discovered the number of shoes thrown away each year in Tunisia.
In France, there were 100 million pairs of shoes thrown away every year. This is a huge figure for us, and for the ecosystem, and for the earth. In Tunisia, it's almost the same, given the population. There were 3 or 4 million shoes thrown away every year. So we thought of giving added value to these shoes, so we restored them.
Zerbui also says he is happy to create jobs for those willing to participate regardless of the educational degree. Besides shoes, these artists dabble in restoring worn-out handbags, giving them a brand new look. Many of the artists and interns say they are proud to be part of this unique project. They say they feel like a family there. The startup is the first trainer restoration business to be launched in North America.
Age does not matter, it's the heart that counts. A Guatemalan female footballer has proved that there is no point one should worry about the age. 57-year-old Alma Salazar has a passion for soccer and takes care of her team's goalpost. Known as Flying Granny, she launches herself and deflects a ball that's looking for the nets. The passion for the sport was born when she was 19 years old. She started training with a men's team where she often found a place as a goalkeeper. Since then, Alma has played for several professional and amateur football clubs. In her room that overlooks a local stadium, Alma keeps trophies she has won on a table, most of them as the least defeated goalkeeper. Locals praise her as an unbeatable goalkeeper. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture and manufacturing. An inflatable building that explores how people would potentially live on Mars has been unveiled in the British city of Bristol. It's a two-story structure with an area of 570 square feet, powered by solar panels. It's designed to cope with temperatures as low as minus 63 degrees Celsius. Although the Martian house will be displayed above ground, its lower level will be fully buried to maximize protection against the harsh environment on Mars. Inside, the top floor features a hydroponic living room filled with decorative plants that feed into a circular wastewater system. A team of experts helped develop the design, taking into consideration the complexity of transporting materials to the red planet and what is already there.
So in the gold inflatable structure which you see above you, that's the main living space of the Martian house. It's gold to reflect dangerous solar rays and cosmic radiation, and it's inflatable because it would be filled with a special concrete made of the dust and water that you find on Mars, again to protect you from those dangerous solar and cosmic rays.
The Martian house was envisioned by local artists 7 years ago. The artists also brought together space scientists, architects, engineers, designers, and even school children. The space-age dwelling explores what a house on Mars could be like and is meant to for research and experiments about the future. The major objective of the project, however, is to provoke questions about living more sustainably with the resources at hand here on Earth.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Japanese plastic food artisans are showcasing their mouth-watering artificial creations at an exhibition in Japan's capital city, Tokyo. From the Leaning Tower of Pizza to fish slicing and cooking, or even the quirky stacked pancakes, you can find almost everything at the exhibit. Other sculptors, including a deep-fried shrimp with full breaded legs scaling a mountain of shredded cabbage like a tiger. Another creation on display is a Tetris game made of chicken. Plastic food artists get really excited for the exhibition each year as they are given a chance to practice their own spin on creativity, bringing food to life with curious characters.
So normally we have to follow orders from clients. We take their views on board when we're making items. Normally that's our work. but for the competition, you can use your imagination. How it finally ends up is totally up to you. I like that aspect of it.
There are some 60 sculptors on display. Some are silly, but others highlight the artist's skills. The models were made with the same careful detail as the rock-solid noodle soups and crispy-looking plastic snacks on display outside Japanese restaurants. There is a lucrative business for them in Japan.
The forest management plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Like many world countries, China has accelerated environmental and social structural changes in urban spaces to deal with this pertinent issue. The Donggu Forest Park is one such project that has provided city dwellers enough space to breathe. It comes into being from what local people usually called rotten woods. The park on the northern bank of the Xiaolinge River covers an area of nearly 120 hectares. Nobody would come there before, as the place was full of flies and mosquitoes. But now, with the environment improved and water cleaned in the river, the place has turned into a wonderland, attracting locals and even foreign tourists.
Now the sky is blue, the water clean and the air fresh, with green greeting you wherever you go. The elderly play Tai Chi or do bodybuilding exercises here. Young people play football, basketball and table tennis.
Over the past 20 years, a large number of cities in China have undergone a brief but rapid urban expansion. Most of these cities are now facing social problems such as an aging population and a high prevalence of chronic diseases. A comprehensive environmental improvement program in the area was initiated in 2014 in order to create space for those who want to take a break from their everyday works.
Whilst not being as painful as a broken limb, animals like humans suffer from chronic and acute pain from gum infections, broken teeth, and bacterial spread through the circulation. A 16-year-old elephant in Pakistan is one such case. Madhubala, suffering for years from a dental infection caused by a broken tusk, has finally got relief thanks to vets, dentists. Named after a legendary Indian actress, Madhubala's eyes were taped shut, her legs tied to support her during sedation and subsequent treatment at a Karachi zoo. The vets had to use drills and other heavy surgical tools to extract the infected tusk. She is one of four African elephants being treated in Karachi by an eight-member team from Global Animal Welfare Group, Four Paws. A Pakistani court last year asked Four Paws to assess the health of the animals after local animal rights activists raised concerns about their well-being. England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Lightning strikes are a very powerful and misunderstood force of nature that we all often see being used in films. A spectacular lightning strike has illuminated the sky over the Scottish town of Dundee. A video from an eyewitness that captured the hypnotic scene has been shared on several social media platforms. The lightning in the clip can be seen sending several bolts in opposite directions. Below, a church spire is silhouetted against the lightning flashes. But lightning is not always spectacular, as sometimes it causes fire to tower and high-rises. Last month, a wind turbine caught fire after being struck by a lightning bolt in North Texas, United States. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
Stunning scenes in Spain as the last supermoon of the year illuminates the night sky amid fireworks and fairs marking the start of festivities for a public holiday. In Malaga, fireworks left the sky a mix of colors against the bright moon. There was also a spectacle of drones that lightened the sturgeon moon. Locals in the Canary Islands also celebrated the three-day holiday by lighting up a Ferris wheel as the full moon beamed beautifully in the sky. If the moon is within 10% of its closest distance to Earth at the moment of full moon, it is called a supermoon. The supermoon has various hues and appears bigger and brighter than when the moon is at its farthest point from Earth.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
They are counting on that small investment in anti-tax Republicans to save them billions in taxes, said Americans for Tax Fairness, which conducted the analysis. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Kenny Stencil, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Just 27 billionaires have spent $90 million to buy GOP Congress, a report shows. Here's the story. A few dozen billionaires are spending tens of millions of dollars on the 2022 midterm elections, mostly to support